Now, non-competes are restraints of trade, and 1550 of the Business and Commerce Code sets out an exception to allow the enforcement of what would otherwise be a restraint of trade, provided that the statute is the statute's requirements are met. And those requirements, before we even get to time and geography and scope of activity of a non-compete, you got to meet the statutory burden of proving that the non-compete was ancillary to or part of an otherwise enforceable agreement at the time the agreement was made. Now, that used to mean something. It used to be that non-competes were invalidated because somebody had not instantly provided the consideration for them. That law is gone. It then used to be that the employer's consideration had to give rise to an interest in restraining competition. That test has been changed to make it too easier to overcome. Now it is the case that you meet that first requirement by showing that the consideration in the otherwise enforceable agreement is reasonably related to an interest worthy of protection. Now, let me pause right there. Normally, the otherwise enforceable agreement is like a confidentiality agreement. It's usually paragraph one of the non-compete, and paragraph two is the non-compete itself. But what the courts have said is an interest worthy of protection are things like trade secrets, specialized unique training. Some courts have said that certain kinds of equity grants to an employee can be the underlying agreement that is related to an interest worthy of protection. And that's really because of goodwill is an interest worthy of protection. It has gotten very easy for employers to meet that burden. And the Supreme Court has told us over about two decades of case law, we're trying to eliminate these technical requirements and push the litigation and the decisions on non-compete cases into, is the non-compete reasonable? And the great thing about it for lawyers is that is usually decided on a facts and circumstances basis. You know, you can cite cases all day long that say 2 years is a reasonable time limitation. State of Texas is a reasonable geographic limitation. A provision that says you can't work with any of our customers over a certain period of time, you can find cases that support that that is reasonable. But those are all because of the unique circumstances of that case. And so that is where litigation is being focused on, is the non-compete reasonable in time, geography, and scope of activity? Now, who bears the burden of proving that? If you're talking about a non-compete that arises out of an employment relationship, the employer bears the burden of showing that its non-compete is reasonable and that it is no broader than necessary in these three different categories, time, geography, and scope of activity, then is no broader than necessary to protect the employer's legitimate interests. I want to also point out that there are requirements. If you're representing a doctor or you're representing someone who employs doctors, the non-compete statute has additional requirements that have to be met to enforce a non-compete against a doctor. It's things like doctor non-competes have to have a buyout. Doctor non-competes have to make certain accommodations for the doctor to take medical records of patients with them, have to allow doctors to be able to essentially treat patients in an exigent, you know, an emergency situation after the employment relationship, even if it would violate the non-compete. And then finally, one other procedural aspect of the Business and Commerce Code, the Texas Non-Compete Act, is that if the non-compete is overly broad, what happens if a judge says, man, 2 years is too long in this circumstance, or you're trying to keep this salesperson that had a, you know, territory in Williamson and Travis County, you're trying to keep them out of selling insurance statewide, that's not either, that geography's too wide and the scope of activity is too broad, what happens? The court is not to throw the agreement out entirely. Courts are supposed to, with certain exceptions, reform the agreement. And if the court does reform the agreement, the non-compete statute says that the agreement can then only be enforced with an injunction going forward, not with an award of damages. So there is essentially like a penalty for writing an overly broad non-compete. That's just kind of the broad overview, and I'll flip it back to Carlos.
And so I'll just make two more comments on this. First, Tom's exactly right. I mean, I heard long time ago somebody say reasonable is a great word because it means that at least two lawyers are put to work. Secondly, geography is literally in the statute, and I have argued that unsuccessfully repeatedly. But there's some cases saying that you do, in fact, have to have a geographic restriction because it's in the statute. There are some cases saying that. The alternative, and kind of I'd say the modern trend, is that there's a substitution for either the customers you interacted with or some other sort of substitution for that. And I think that's still something being worked out through the court. So now let's turn to, apart from the general overview, kind of the strategy. And we're going to start with the employer side, because typically in these cases, the employer is the plaintiff. Typically, the former employee has left, is doing something different, and the employer learns about it, sends a cease and desist letter, receives not an acceptable response, and files suit. So from the employer side,